Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Back in the saddle here at the Fairhope Bureau after a late night getting in from Montgomery. Well, more on that in just a moment. 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, text us. Bradley J. from Breitbart News coming up in about 30 minutes. We'll talk about what's going on Capitol Hill. And there's some elections tonight, South Carolina and Maine. Anything unexpected? Graham Plattner on the ballot in Maine amid all the scandals, but not really an opponent. We'll talk about that coming up in the bottom of this hour. Travis Johnson, Pathways Church, talked about this yesterday, these pride banners around downtown. And what's going on there? Why do we do this every year? So my understanding is that it's available for a holiday, and in the eyes of the city of Mobile, that Pride Month qualifies as a valid holiday to commemorate. But Pastor Johnson has the details on this, so we'll talk about that in the 10 o'clock hour. And finally, it is Tuesday. We'll talk to Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs, his take on the elections. And the elections in the coming weeks, there's anything to watch for there. Once again, text line 251-343-0106. You know what to do there, and we'll interact as much as possible. So Montgomery, Alabama last night, Montgomery Performing Arts Center. We had five of the six candidates we'd hoped to have. We had both attorney general candidates, Catherine Robertson and Jay Mitchell. We had both lieutenant gubernatorial candidates, and they had a very clean debate. Wes Allen and John Wall. And then for reasons of what was going on in Washington, D.C. last night, Barry Moore was unable to attend, submitted a video, and Jared Hudson gave a 12-minute speech as that race has gotten a little rocky for United States Senate. But let's start with this. Attorney General, look, I think these are both good candidates. I feel pretty good about if either one won, we'd be in all right shape. The thing that the two of them wanted to talk about, and I just don't know that this lands, but the dark money attacks and, you know, who's getting money from where, and no one really knows. There was that back and forth because it was not on my agenda. So I was the moderator, by the way, in case I didn't make that clear. The questions I ask are pretty much policy driven, but they kept wanting to talk about each other's campaign finances. Now, look, that stuff's important, but anybody in this audience really like sweat that? And sometimes these campaigns become about each other and not about the voters. And that's my one critique. That you have a race with a high number of undecideds, people just not engaged, not locked in on down ballot races. And you wonder why. Well, the dark money discussion, people just assume it's all dark money. That everybody's taking dark, quote unquote, dark money, not even sure really what the term dark money means. Otherwise, I mean, they answered all the questions. Federal overreach, gambling on the horizon. Criminal prosecution, voter integrity, primarily dealing with absentee balloting. The gubernatorial race, for some reason I expected, you know, some jabs from Wes Allen about Nehemiah. But no, not at all. And I'll say this about Secretary Allen. I thought he had one of his better appearances a cycle that I've seen. Now, I haven't seen him a whole lot this go around, but generally he talked about his qualifications, maybe a little less about his personal life. His, you know, he's a good family man. And then John Wall, y'all know him from Tuesdays for years on this show. He comes off as kind of the happy warrior, a very charismatic manner to him. That went well, the lieutenant governor's, and that's a very difficult one to moderate and come up questions for, because we don't really do much with lieutenant governor's office. Essentially, you get some appointments, you preside over the Senate, which is important, but not necessarily really. The chamber is really controlled by the pro tem. Then finally, the U.S. Senate race. So you've been listening to the show the last maybe week or so. The questions about Barry Moore's military service have come up. And I think there's some valid criticisms there about the way they're going about it. However, I just, it's too late. I mean, y'all know about it on this show because we talk about it. It's going to have a very marginal impact on the vote totals. It didn't really even come up yesterday. So Barry Moore, he has to be in Washington, D.C., so he puts out a video. And it was fine. And then Jared Hudson gives a 12-minute speech. Didn't want to take questions. And so it was okay speech. But here's the problem. I mean, I feel like this race may be too late to really change the outcome. First off, in the primary, there was a big 15-point margin for Barry Moore. The polling is all over the place. I gotta just say this about the polling, and I was talking to a lawmaker about this yesterday. The polling in Alabama is just notoriously bad. It's a hard state to poll. You don't know what part of the state's going to show up to vote. It may be one part of the state is having a runoff in a local race or a sheriff's race or something like that. It's going to drive up turnout, and it varies from cycle to cycle. But these pollsters, especially national pollsters, come in, and they say, well, this percentage of people showed up to vote in the last midterm, and this percentage of people showed up in this last midterm here, and they try to weight it in that way, but it's never consistent. There's always some kind of variable in Alabama elections, and that makes it very difficult to pull. It just doesn't. It's you just kind of got to know where you think votes are going to turn out a little higher. For example, maybe turnout will be 10% higher in the state house race with Francis Hulk Jones and Joe Freeman. And it won't be the same as it was in 2022. Why? Because you have people who are engaged locally who will go to vote just for that race. And then they'll pull, you know, a vote for whoever, because they are going to vote for their candidate there. And that has varied over time. So if you're not aware of this, if you are pulling this, say, for like the NRSC or Club for Growth or whoever, you may not be aware of some of these local dynamics, and you're not taking that into account, and it doesn't give you a clear view of where the race really is. And then there's some other historical trends. And we talk about this all the time with Barry Moore. He underpolls. Why? There's a psychological reason for that, I suppose, that his supporters, people who are more prone to support him, do not respond to polls. I think that is also true for John Wall. So it's hard to get a good assessment of where things are right now. Because the one thing that we did take away from last month on May 19th was that the polling just wasn't as accurate as maybe polling has been in other places this year. Your Trump endorsed candidates outperformed their expectations. We thought it would be a John Wall, Wes Allen runoff, and just base it on a polling average. You would have thought that. You would have been right. But you would not have had John Wall at 40%. You would have had him probably in the high 20s. That the candidates that weren't in that race, that particular race, that weren't John Wall and Wes Allen, the ones who didn't make the runoff, Rick Pate, Nicole Wadsworth, Pat Bishop, Stuart Tankersley, they just did not, they had no traction. They didn't get a big slice of the vote, or as big of a slice of the vote as we may have thought that they would have. So anyway, there's a whole synopsis of kind of what's going on. So the point is, we don't know really where this is. It's hard to, you know, we can make some educated guesses about it, but we don't know where this is going to be a week from today. The other caveat here about the Senate race is that there's just not enough money for Jared Hudson, I think, right now, to really make an issue of the military service. And also, guys, a couple of other things real quick, because we're about to go to break. I think Club for Growth is going to come in big here in the final days, and that's going to drown out a lot of Hudson's messaging. And then it's just we're not going to, you know, what kind of turnout are we expecting? And I think the eve of the election, Donald Trump may do a robocall, and that's probably worth 2 or 3 points.
First thing I remember.
Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
And a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one can change my mind, but Mama tried.
Get on me, wanna know, Hank, why do you drink?
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. Bradley J coming up in the next segment. Ultra Runner, good job last night. The strangest moment was when you asked Wes Allen what his first policy priority would be. And he said he would ask the timber industry how we could help them more. The tax advantage, road advantage, big mules need more. Did you find this odd? It did catch me off guard. I tell you, you know, because he didn't understand the acoustics on the stage were horrible because you were getting, it was me talking and then the sound system was like drowning me out on a delay. So it was hard for the candidates to hear me ask the questions. You kept hearing them say, can you repeat the question? Well, that's because the room was like just echo. It was, you know, it was the Performing Arts Center and we didn't have one of the monitors facing us to where they could hear me. And I was like drowning myself out when I would talk and they would do the same. It was hard for me to understand them. So that was like number one. So that was like really a challenge for the entire debate. And then I'll say this. If you're watching the AG, they went fast. And I had to like make up a question there at the end to kind of keep it going. Because what we were trying to do, we were trying to get three debates in about an hour and a half time span. And I had like five or six questions, and they flew through them, but they didn't, you know, Catherine Robertson used all her time on her closing statement, and they would shut their mics off. I wish they would have not done that. But they were, it was kind of an odd set of circumstances because really there's no like rhyme or reason. And this is like the 10th or 11th one I've done this cycle of these forums and debates. And this one was a little more difficult, just trying to work everything in. But just the room was just, it was a very strange room. I've never been to an event there. I've been to a bunch of events right next to it there at the conference center. But the policy priority question was also one of those that kind of threw in because the role of the lieutenant governor is very, it's not quite what it used to be. Essentially, you preside over the Senate and you're the governor in waiting if needed. There's some appointments. So when you want to talk about policy, it's not a policy office necessarily. You have a bully pulpit, and I think Will Ainsworth has done a lot with that office, more than his predecessor, who's our governor now. But it's not like you're introducing bills. You can kind of do it on the margins. So when they both established this, that they were going to use it to promote a conservative agenda, then it was time to like really hone in on what that ought to be. And what Ultra Runner's referring to is that, let's start talking about forestry. So, you know, Toothless Bammer, what's the deal with Patrick Howley, the Tyler Robinson conspiracy and more? I don't know. I haven't been keeping up with that. I know Howley from my days. Well, I worked with him twice in my career at the Daily Caller. And that's when Tucker was in charge still, Tucker Carlson, and at Breitbart. And that was when Steve Bannon was in charge. I haven't heard from him in years. Remember, Patrick Howley was the one who broke the Merrill scandal, the John Merrill scandal. And then it got picked up by everybody. Let's see here. I named Texture. Barry Moore could have won the Medal of Honor. I still won't vote for him. Jerry, if you're old enough to remember Alvin Holmes, he used to take a slab of ribs with him on the floor and bash Alabama National Guard members on the floor of the Senate every time he wanted to play to his base. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. And a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just like no bandit runs. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some tell my mind them brakes. Let it all hang out cause we got a run to make.
Amarillo by morning. And
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Tuesday morning, a week from Election Day. So we're going to hit it as hard as we can between now and next Tuesday. Text line 251-343-0106. Pastor Travis Johnson coming up in about an hour. A lot of you asked for him. I am genuinely curious to see what he's got to say, but we got the Pride banners back in downtown Mobile, and I thought we had settled that like 2 years ago or something. But here they are, and a lot of you seem to be upset about it, and you should be. I mean, this is the kind of thing we can't have the state seal of approval on Pride Month. And then finally, in the 11 o'clock hour, the legendary Will Hampson, as he's known up in Huntsville Radio. I'm not quite comfortable with that moniker, but that's what Dale Jackson calls him on his program. However, joining us now, he's my colleague at Breitbart News, kind of an expert in a lot of things D.C. Bradley Jay is with us. Bradley, how are you?
Mr. Poor, doing well. Always great to be with you.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. Before we get into what's going on Capitol Hill, South Carolina and Maine, anything going to surprise us about what happens today?
The Maine Senate Democrat primary, I mean, it's a fait accompli at this point. Plattner isn't the only one on the ballot, but Plattner's going to win. And honestly, that might even help him. I think some voters, because Governor Janet Mills is still on the ballot, some voters might vote for her, knowing that she'll lose, but then consider that kind of their penance or their punishment of Plattner, and then go and vote for him in the general election. But no surprises there. I am intrigued by the South Carolina gubernatorial race, if for no other reason than what will Nancy Mace do over the next several hours, some crazy thing or last minute Hail Mary. But I mean, there's five candidates within several points of each other in that race. But that's probably the big one today, South Carolina governor's race.
Do we have like a Trump endorsed guy? And is it the typical, like we see in a lot of other places?
Yeah. I mean, look, Trump was pushed very hard by a lot of his money folks to make an endorsement in that race. I think, as it usually goes with these, you know, they want somebody who's gonna, you know, they want who's gonna be lucrative for them, and they want to have somebody, they want Trump to get behind that person. He endorsed a lieutenant governor there, Pamela Vett. It's a crowded race. I would guess that she is gonna make the runoff. It's certain to be a runoff, but nothing's guaranteed. She's the front runner, but it's, like I said, it's going to be one to watch. You don't know what kind of fireworks you'll see the last day in a race like that.
Do we think Nancy Mace has a shot at the runoff?
Polling would say that she has a shot, but she is not favored to do so. She's kind of fallen off. I mean, I think that at first blush, a lot of voters are attracted to her fight and willing to take things on. But it gets to the point where it just wears on people. And then the closer you look at her with all the scandals and just kind of unhinged behavior, that voters tend to back off. So I don't know. I mean, she could land anywhere from second to fifth there. But I don't know. I think she's going to be right there in that 3-4 range and miss the runoff. But you just never know till people cast their ballots.
On the Maine Senate stuff, I we do this every 6 years. Susan Collins is really in trouble this time. She better, they better send her lots and lots and lots of money. Mitch McConnell better get behind her. Bill Frist better get behind her, whoever the majority leader is at that moment. And somehow just continues to have very good outcomes. It's like every cycle that she's on the ballot, this is her time to lose. It feels that way again to me.
Yeah. And 6 years ago, she was running against Sarah Gideon, and all of the polling, even in the days leading up to the general election, showed Collins getting absolutely spanked. And I think she won by like 8 points. So you just, again, Maine, I know earlier in the program you were talking about Alabama being a difficult state to poll, and you're certainly right. Maine, certainly different dynamics, but for whatever reason, polling over the past several cycles just has not been that accurate. I know in Maine's second district, Republicans had been trying to take out Jared Golden for years and would feel good going into election day and then would always lose. So, again, different dynamics, but I don't know. Right now, I feel pretty good about where Collins is. She's got a long road to hoe, and we're a long way out from the general election. I'm more intrigued in the shorter term by what Democrats do over the next month or so, assuming Plattner wins, as I no one's predicting otherwise. The Democrats in the state have 4 weeks where they can, if he drops out or is pressured to drop out, they can choose another nominee. I don't think that it'll come to that, but I mean, what else might come out of that race? I mean, it's just more and more and more we hear about Plattner. I know that we're at Breitbart certainly tuned in to that race to see what he's going to do next. And that's all everybody in Washington is talking about, is what's going to come next with Graham Plattner. But you got to think that Susan Collins is feeling pretty good about where she is right now.
I mean, I can imagine Maine being very difficult. I mean, so having spent some time up there, I even lived in Maine, but do people still live up there with like out of electricity? In that cold state, it's always, but I bet, you know, a lot of that state, no cell signals in a lot of places. It's a very rural, and then when you pull it, you lean heavy on Portland, Bangor, and the more populated areas. That probably skews a lot of the samples. It's probably not it's still a blue state, but it's certainly not a state what we, you know, the way we probably perceive it to be.
Yeah, and Maine's second district is geographically the largest congressional district east of the Mississippi. I mean, it is just a huge rural district, and you're right. It's just a different kind of people that live there. They're probably not, you know, answering their text polls to unnamed unknown numbers who are reaching out to them. The people I've known to live in Maine, no offense, Jeff, but it's kind of a mixed bag of some we'll call them different kind of folks. I know just talking last week with someone who with a conservative who lived in Maine for many, many years. She was talking about how many conservatives have moved away from that state just because of how increasingly crazy it's gotten there with some of the things that they're doing, just with their state legislature and their governor. Will that have an impact? I mean, is it been enough of that over the past 6 years to impact Susan Collins' general election? I mean, maybe, but I mean, there's just so many competing dynamics, and the bottom line is the Graham Plattner thing has been such a disaster that you don't know, but it's with the timing, with it happening before the primary, and really in that 1 month sweet spot between when Janet Mills dropped out of the primary and the actual primary itself today, it's just been a really unusual race to watch. And even in a town, and this is Washington's a cynical town where, folks like to think that they've seen it all. But this is a very unique case, and so it is difficult to handicap what's going to happen between now and the general election.
Joined by Breitbart News' Bradley Jay here on the program. So Capitol Hill, apparently there were some votes last night that prevented Congressman Moore from participating in a debate. But tell us, where are we on reconciliation? Is that happening this week? And then what else is FISA renewal? I think was the other one they discussed being concerned about. But is that where are we in the on the chart on that?
Well, first off, look, I love Barry. Worked for him for a year or two. Pretty good fella. That excuse doesn't hold water. I'm sorry. They had two suspension votes last night that were non-controversial. That both of them passed. I think all Republicans and Democrats who voted voted for those two suspension bills, and they don't vote on anything today until later this afternoon. So that's look. If you don't want to join a debate, that's fine. But he's missed plenty of suspension votes in the past, and for him to say that he had to be there last night to vote and misbate, I don't like that. I'm sorry. That didn't carry water. However, to your question, later today, it does seem like the House is gearing up to pass that reconciliation bill that's going to inject more funds. I think it's $70 billion. So, you know, significant money into ICE, into the Border Patrol. Remember, I mean, this has been an issue for how long? I think in late January was when the DHS shutdown first began. In between then and now, there's so much back and forth. Eventually, the Congress was able to pass a DHS funding bill that did not include ICE or Border Patrol. So it was, you know, Coast Guard and FEMA and a few other agencies, some with a immigration or border component. But the ICE and the CBP has been needed funding. It's still going off a lot of the big, beautiful bill funding, which the administration was very prudently set aside in the event that something like this happened. But it seems like now the House is going to be able to pass this bill. I mean, I'm sure it'll be only with Republicans supporting it, but they've got a rule vote tonight or later this afternoon to move it to the floor. And then I imagine in short order, they'll move probably later tonight. They'll move to pass that bill. That's one more thing off Congress's plate. There are a couple more things. They've got to deal with FISA. I don't know if they'll be able to pass a long-term term extension before that expires. I believe that's Friday. They've got to do like a farm bill, and they'd like to do a highway bill and this and that. But, I mean, we're really in that last little legislative burst before Congress more or less takes off for the year so that they can get in campaign mode.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, there's a flurry of these, like, kind of show hearings right now and all of this, and then it's going to be back to the campaign trail, it seems like.
Yeah, and if you just look at the actual number of legislative days remaining on the calendar, it's already small. But you're going to begin seeing a week here or a week there get canceled because there's either not enough to do. And when I say not enough to do, I mean, like, what does – certainly the House. What does the House actually do? They pass messaging bills, and they pass bills that absolutely – like, your must-pass bills, expiring authorizations – government funding bills, that sort of thing, and usually only after some short-term reauthorizations kicking the can down the road. I mean, Congress is always, I mean, it's unable to do its bare minimum job. They're always playing catch-up, which is why they can't do anything truly impactful. The Senate, I mean, look, I think that the Paxton endorsement, certainly when it happened from Trump, I know a lot of us looked at each other and said, well, there goes the president's legislative agenda for the rest of the year, or at least whatever the Senate Republicans might have considered passing for him, which wasn't going to be a lot. I mean, if you look at what happened with the reconciliation bill and there were votes on the weaponization fund and a back and forth between that and whether there'd be funding for security for the Trump ballroom that's replaced the East Wing. It really is ridiculous. It's so much of it is just egos butting heads with one another. But the bottom line is there is not going to be a lot of action on Capitol Hill for the rest of the year.
So the efforts to stop the anti-weaponization thing and the ballroom, they never got out of the gate, did they?
So what happened is the acting attorney general, Todd Blanche, said that the weaponization fund is dead. There were some votes in the Senate during the Votorama last week to try to make that, to put that into law, to permanently ban any type of weaponization fund from, I think there were a handful of different amendments, some more nuanced, that some were, it could never go specifically to January 6th defendants, and some just, it could never be, just despite there already being a fund in existence for this kind of purpose. I mean, Lisa Page and Peter Strzok were paid for attempting to subvert a United States presidential election in 2016. I mean, it's ridiculous the way that this fund has been abused in the past. Republicans just sat on their hands and didn't do anything, and now it wants to go to folks who have legitimately had their government been weaponized against them. And Republicans like Tom Tillis and all these other John Cornyns, you know, pitch a big fit. That's a shame. I don't think that we've heard the last of this weaponization fund. Who knows? Once the reconciliation bill gets passed, if it gets passed today, maybe Trump wants to start it back up. Now, there is the little issue of Todd Blanche currently having his nomination for becoming the attorney general outright is pending. So I don't know if he would make that announcement and flip on that before he's confirmed, if he can get confirmed. But again, that weaponization fund is out there, and we may not have heard the last of it.
Bradley, folks want to find you online. How can they do so?
Breitbart.com and on X or Twitter at Bradley AJ.
Bradley, we appreciate your time this morning. We'll do it again soon.
Always great joining you, Jeff.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
I didn't mean to treat you bad. Didn't know just what I had. But honey, now I
back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking with us on this Tuesday morning. Text line, you want to get involved, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the show. Interesting text here, and it's a big what if. If Al Gore passed to throw Tuberville at the ballot, what's next? Well, then the party would get to pick the nominee. Essentially. Now who they would recruit, I think this has happened before. I mean, we know it happened with Charlie Graddick when they took him off the ballot to put Bill Baxley on. It won't be Kid McFeeters. It won't be any of these other Republicans who ran. It'll be somebody else. Who would they recruit? The names I hear, and I don't know how realistic this is, but hell, we're talking about it, would be Steve Marshall or Will Ainsworth. For, you know, up until about 2 years ago, everybody just assumed those two would be duking it out for governor. The Tuberville would remain in the Senate. And it would be a Marshall Ainsworth gubernatorial contest to fill the vacancy left by Kay Ivey. And here we are, June 9th, 2026, and neither one. We still have elections to go, and neither Republican elections, that is, and neither one are in the mix. So I would look at those two. I don't think Marshall's necessarily interested in it, but they may have some conversations. I don't think Tuberville is going to be removed from the ballot. What would the backlash be like, guys? You're taking that decision out of the voters' hands. And you're leaving it up to the party structure to decide. This gets taken to court. Tuberville has a very, I mean, do we think that this is a real possibility? I don't. And I still think all of this discussion about residency, I think the onus is on the,
let's take it on the
critics here. And it's going to be hard for them to prove and make the case that he's ineligible. You can throw out all the forms, documents, but they have one to counter it. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Right up over Spanish Fort into Mobile, my hometown. Mr. T.